Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered. And of course, I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. And with me, as she has been through this entire journey, Drea Kaufman.
Hello.
Hey, how
Sometimes
are you?
Sometimes I'm here in a more sane sense than others. I'll let you all decide what that looks like for me today.
Oh, you know, I think after doing this for so long, there's probably been plenty of times for both of us where that's the case. So,
for sure.
Yeah. But I'm really excited. We've got a few new reviews. And so just wanted to say thank you to people. We had one from Rachel A3, 5 stars over there on Apple Podcasts. And they said, I recently bought a house with a long to-do list and started listening to this podcast to make my house projects more bearable. Now I find myself looking forward to these projects so I can listen to Owl Post and hear some of my own thoughts put into words and also listen to new perspectives and opinions pertaining to the many themes and ideas in the Harry Potter books. I first read the series in high school, then read it for a second time in college, and this podcast has inspired me to read it again now that I am an adult. Both times I read the series, different elements within the book stood out to me, and I'm excited to discover which parts of the story impacted me the most as an adult. Thank you for your wonderful insight, humor, and ideas.
I love that. And I agree. I think that there's a lot of stories like that, but you know, you read them in one place and you take something away from it and you wait 5, 6, 10, whatever years, you read it again and you take away something entirely different. I found the same as a parent. I took things away very differently before I was a parent than I do after being a parent. The news included in that, to be clear, the first 8 months, I could not read the news. I couldn't handle all the trauma while, you know, knowing she's this tiny little thing that could get hurt. So I totally appreciate that perspective and I like that. So thank you for pointing that out. I don't think we've hammered that home enough. So I really like that.
Yep. No, I completely agree. And I think, you know, it's one of the hallmarks, and I would say it is the hallmark of a really good series, is that you can read it at different parts of your life and it can speak to you in different ways. And I think that's what has made Harry Potter really continue to stand the test of time, you know, with the thematic elements, and that it's not something that only children. And I think that was the, you know, it's obviously the reason we're still talking about today. And it was the thing that made it so popular in the beginning as well, as I think parents reading it to their kids. As the series went on, they became more and more invested in it as well. But part of that is, you know, as you read it in as an adult, you can also see what Rowling is doing more easily than a child in the sense of what she's trying to say. So I think that's really cool. We do have one more.
Yeah.
Sorry. Review.
And I was just going to say too, we've even seen based on the current climate the world's in, right? It's a very different world now than it was when she first released these books. And, you know, we've talked a lot over the last at least book or two about how, you know, 2020 for us was really thematic within the book too. So I'm not going to keep babbling on. Y'all get
it. No, you're absolutely right. And I think that's a hallmark of a good series as well, is that it's not something that's tied to one specific thing, but it can continue to be applicable in many different eras. So our next review, I'm not quite sure how to say, it's like BSB fan 808, I think. But they said mahalo, which, oh man, that means they're from the islands, which is really cool.
Yeah.
5 stars. Thank you for this podcast. I literally discovered Owl Post a few days ago. I've got a lot of catching up to do, but it's been wonderful listening to each of the discussions about the chapter so far. It's given me a better understanding of the story. Keep up with the awesome podcast. I hope you'll continue the discussions for the 8th Harry Potter book, the Fantastic Beasts narratives, and the smaller books from Hogwarts like Quidditch Through the Ages and Beedle the Bard. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate that review. Mahalo to you and aloha for your review. So thank you so much. It really does mean a lot that people will spend their time and give us these type of reviews. So, and it really has. It's helped the show grow. I think I've said it before, but of all the podcasts that I do, this is the one that's the most downloaded and the most successful, like by a long shot. So thank you guys so much. Well, of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, we would appreciate a star rating review. And we mentioned those on the show. You can find us anywhere, though. Just make sure you're subscribed and you'll get the episodes as soon as it drops. This is episode 191, which means there are only 9 episodes left. So we really appreciate everybody reaching out to us. And you can do that over at thenerdparty.com/contact if you want to send us an email. You can also go and find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And we've also got an Instagram feed you can follow, which is over at The Nerd Party there on Instagram. So, Drea, this is the chapter 29, The Last Diadem. And, you know, we literally pick right back up where we left off, which was Neville had come through the portrait. And I just absolutely love this whole thing, because Neville is so excited to see them. And not only is he excited to see them, but he wants to know everything, because they only have had so much news about Harry and what they've been doing. And he's like, just so excited to hear whether all the things that they've heard are actually true. I mean, did you ride on a dragon? Did you break into Gringotts? All these things. And it's just, there's this over exuberance. And I think what's really kind of fun at the very beginning of this chapter here is there's a little bit of joy that we haven't had in a long time, just by seeing Neville. And his joy of seeing his friends for the first time in like a year
brings like a renewed energy to them that I think they really need at this point, right? They're kind of like separately, each of these groups we come to learn are sort of downtrodden and have been through the ringer the past year, very different ways. But I think both of them sort of refresh each other, right? Which I secretly hope is what's going to happen when I see some of my friends for the first time in, you know, a year or whatever. But, you know, Neville has so much enthusiasm. He's got all this energy. He has a difference to him. They really note that he's got like this kind of calm confidence they've never seen in him before. He's really, and he goes on to explain what has happened at Hogwarts over the past, what, like semester and a half, something like mm-hmm. that they've been there. And how, you know, they've kept Dumbledore's army just powerful and strong. And he was really inspired by Harry to start speaking up when appropriate. And that, you know, they've done things like kind of taunt the Death Eaters, and they've learned how far to push it, because, you know, he's got pure blood. They're not going to kill me. They're just going to torture me, but I can survive that. You know, there's this real a difference of approach that Neville has taken, and he's really stepped into the leadership vacuum that Harry left when he went looking for Horcruxes, which I think kind of takes Harry and all of them by surprise, right? They're used to him mm-hmm. being someone who came along and really wanted to do something impactful and powerful, and they're seeing him really come into his own. So much so that, you know, as he's explaining this, one of the things he explains is that when he really pushes it too far, the Death Eaters go after his grandmother, right? Yep. And that she fights them off, goes on the run, sends him a letter telling him how proud she is of him and how proud his parents would be of him for who he's become, which is huge considering when we started this, it was my grandmother is embarrassed of me. I should be ashamed. Yep. And now it's a complete 180. So this is one of those massive moments where this character goes from one type to a completely different person, because it was in him all along, which is what yep. the Sorting Hat saw and why they put him in Gryffindor.
Yeah, I think it's really beautiful. I love, you know, you could tell too, he's got this great relationship with Aberforth. He even calls him Ab. You know, he tells him we've got other people coming, you know, and there's this really beautiful moment before they make their way down the hallway to where they're going to the castle, where Harry looks at Aberforth and he's like, thank you so much for saving us twice. And he's like, well, you got to be careful because I'm not sure I'll be able to do it a third. And so it's really neat to kind of just see the way, you know, his change of heart. And what you can see, I think, in this here is that his attitude in that you know, the beginning of last chapter and the fight they kind of have is you can tell this is a character who he's worried about these kids, you know. Yeah. It wasn't a thing of like, that he truly feels like nobody should fight and everything's lost and it's all done for. But he truly is worried for these kids, and like he knows he can only do so much, and he worries about that. And I think there's a real beauty to seeing that in this character. And of course, you know, he's going to help them in this sense. Like, you know, he's been this way station for people to be able to come back and forth from the castle. He's been giving them food, Neville tells them. And, you know, he begins to, you know, and I think this is just some really disturbing stuff. You know, Neville kind of breaks down what's been going on at the school here over the last year. And it's super disturbing. I mean, you know, you have the Caro brother and sister who are really making life, I think, you know, hell is a perfect a word for what they're doing to the kids, you know. The way that the Death Eaters are making people obey is by going after their family members. So that's what happened with Luna. You know, her dad got a little bit too mouthy in the paper, and his daughter was stolen, you know. Mm-hmm. And the same thing has been happening to kids, you know, throughout Hogwarts. And like you said, the same thing happened to Neville's grandmother. They just didn't realize they were coming after the wrong granny.
I love that the granny is such a BA. She's just, I don't know another way to put it that sums up how I'm feeling about it. She's just a real bad mama jama. Like, she does it right. Like, I love that they're like, whoever they sent after her is still in St. Mungo's because they totally underestimated her. Which I love is just this little aside. Don't underestimate someone just because they're older. Don't underestimate them just because they're, you know, a small elderly woman. She's still got some fight in her. And I love that.
Well, and I think it's really interesting, you know, to me, what we're learning about what's been happening at school. And it is, you know, quite disturbing because, you know, you mentioned Neville kind of taking on that role. He had kind of seen Harry do, where, you know, mouthing off and trying to use that as a way to show hope and everything. And you know, as time has gone on, they've had to stop doing a lot of those things because, you know, at Christmas time you had Luna leave and you had Ginny not come back. They were helpful ringleaders in that. You know, you had Michael Connor, who had gone to save a young student who had been like chained up and like having him get tortured. And so like just terrible, terrible, terrible things have been happening here. And then of course the Caros have been teaching dark arts and muggle studies, which, you know, dark arts is now just turned into punishment time for people who disobey. You practice unforgivable curses on them, like the Cruciatus curse. And then muggle studies is basically about how muggles are less than human, they're dirt, and how basically they deserve anything they get. Which, yep. If that doesn't sound familiar as a philosophy, just you know, read any dictator or, you know, a terrible regime's way of dealing with people that they don't like. This is exactly, you know, what they have become, and we see that blatantly here. Like, this is straight up the worst of the worst. And so I really appreciate that we're truly getting to see what, through what's happening at Hogwarts here, you know, what things look like when Death Eaters and their ilk run things.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a lot. We learn a lot. It's all horrifying. And I love that specifically she has Harry think that he can't tell what's more horrifying, that this is happening or the casual and accepting tone with which Neville is explaining what's been happening to them, right? They have become so desensitized to how awful this is that it's just very matter of fact. And hey, it's okay. I went and got a coffee today and it was delicious and, you know, whatever, is how they're discussing the torture and this horrible situation they've been in for, you know, what would you say, eight, 9 months, something like that, maybe a year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that speaks volumes when you can be that desensitized to what's going on around you. So, you know, it's a lot for them to take in. I do love, though, there's some beautiful moments in there. Like you pointed out that Luna was taken away when the Quibbler got a little too mouthy against the Death Eaters and the movement. And, you know, he's like, but Luna's okay. And he's like, oh, yeah, no, I know. We've been still using the Dumbledore coins from, what, 2 books ago now? A book ago? They're still communicating via that, and it's driving, you know, the Death Eaters crazy because they can't figure out how they're doing it. But you know, he knows that Luna's safe, he knows that Dean's safe, he knows that Ginny's safe, you know. So I do like that, you know, and he really gives Hermione credit for that. Like, it's brilliant. That was brilliant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as he's explaining and as this is going on, you know, they think Harry and Ron and Hermione are back to fight with them, to start an uprising, to fight back and take Hogwarts back. And that's, as we know, not why they're there. But because that's what Neville and everyone else thinks, Neville has started to send messages using the coin to others to come back. And so throughout the latter part of this chapter, while, you know, they're trying to convince Harry to let them help him, we have a few familiar faces show up through the portrait hole, through Aberforth's bar.
Yeah. I mean, we have students coming in. We've got, you know, some, like you said, really familiar faces, which is really fun. You know, the fact that we have Fred and George showing up, you know, we have Dean showing up, you know, we have all of these, you know, characters which we really love. And I think that, you know, Harry would be enjoying this if, and sadly, if he wasn't starting to see what Voldemort's doing, which is Voldemort has been to the shack and the ring is not there. And so now he's in a rage and he's flying off to other places to look for his hidden Horcruxes. And Harry has no idea when he's going to arrive at Hogwarts and how long they have. And so it's a really a moment of desperation for him, because he's got to find whatever this is, because he doesn't know how much time they have. And then, of course, who should show up through the portrait? The last place, honestly, that Harry wants her to be, but Ginny herself, as well as Cho Chang. And of course, Harry's excited and devastated to see Ginny all at the same time, because he doesn't really want her to be here. And I love, though, that he can't help but think, wow, she looks so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, he is happy to see them, but sad thinking that this is kind of the most dangerous place you could be, right? Like, there's a reason why he hasn't been around all these people for so long. And so, you know, he has this sort of guilt, I'm happy to see them, but they need to get away from me, kind of response to all these people. And, you know, as they're arriving, we mentioned that, you know, they're trying to convince Harry to let them help, because, you know, he tells them, like, we're not here to fight back. but I can't tell you why I'm here. And they kind of keep pushing and pushing. And finally, Hermione takes him kind of aside or quietly says, like, you know, you can let them help you without telling you what, telling them what you're doing. Like, they're already here. They're not going to give up. They know more about what's been going on and more about things than we do right now. And so, you know, Harry kind of says, all right, let's do it. And basically says, you know, we're looking for something. We don't know what it is. It's probably related to Ravenclaw. Don't know much about that. And he kind of directs the question to the Ravenclaw group as to, like, what is it that I could be looking for, right? It's going to be a small object of some sort of value, maybe. I don't know, right?
On that, I think that one of the really important things that we get here is that Harry, as Hermione and Ron are encouraging him to ask for help, he remembers something from the conversation that they just had with Aberforth, with just this idea of secrets and lies, and that that's kind of who Albus Dumbledore was, this person who, you know, grew up with these secrets and lies and keeping his secrets very close to himself. And Harry makes the decision here to be different than Dumbledore, to not go down that road. And, you know, that's also, you know, Dumbledore had confessed to Harry that, you know, he wasn't always right and he didn't always do the right thing. And so I think it's beautiful here that Harry has this moment of no, okay, it's okay for me to ask for their help. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something in that that is, you know, so different. And it shows what's beautiful about it is it shows growth. You know, we've talked about Harry's ability to put things together and puzzle pieces together, but I think this also shows that Harry just has the ability to truly see what's important and to learn from others' mistakes without necessarily having to make those same mistakes himself, which is a true sign of wisdom for anybody. And I really love that moment here. I think it's such a big moment for the character. And, you know, he does make the right decision. They don't have enough time for him just to figure it out himself, even with just Ron and Hermione, right? He needs their help. And I love the discussion about, you know, like what it could be that is Ravenclaw's that was, you know, they're looking for. And they're talking about the lost diadem. And like Michael Connor's like, yeah, but it's lost. That's the point.
Lost diadem is lost. Yeah.
And we learned that it's been lost for a really long time because it disappeared with Ravenclaw herself. So, I mean, it's been, you know, generations upon generations that this thing has not been found.
Yeah. And I do like you calling out that he makes a different decision than Dumbledore. And the only, just a small point to add to that, I think that's also something Harry's become really good at, is being an empathetic leader, right? He can take the feeling he experienced being on the other end of that and not then do the same thing to others, right? He was sort of subjected to the withholding of information and the keeping of secrets really, really close. And so I think he knew how that made him feel, and he could see all the problems it caused him, right? So why should he do the same thing again, right? And that's something that a lot of people can't always do. They can't always see how their actions are going to be the same as something they've experienced. So I think that I really like how that was also part kind of his thought process. But yeah, so they start talking about this lost diadem, and you know, Harry's like, well, can you show me what it looks like? And you know, Cho starts, because Cho's the one who sort of pipes up and says there's a statue in our common room. It'll show you what it looks like. Maybe that will help. I don't know. Would that help? He's like, yeah, I can, you know, she's like, I can take you there. And Ginny pipes up and is like, nope, Luna, why don't you want it? Why don't you take him? Why don't you take him? And it's followed really with funny. Cho looks really disappointed, which is really funny. It's like a moment where it's like, no, Luna, I trust you much more. Why don't you go? why don't you go? And she's like, oh yeah, I'd love to take you, Harry. Let's go. And Harry's like, I don't got time for this. Whatever. Whoever's coming, get under the cloak. We gotta go. You know, he doesn't have time for the inner relationship drama. He's like, he knows Voldemort's on his way and his time's running out. So he's like, let's get to it. And then they kind of hide under the cloth, you know?
Yeah, it's so cool because, you know, again, we use things that we've seen throughout the series. You know, we use the invisibility cloak and we use the Marauder's map, you know, to get there. And what's interesting is, you know, Harry's never been to the Ravenclaw Tower. So he doesn't really know where they're going. And, you know, you have to answer a riddle to get in there, which Harry finds slightly annoying at this point. But Luna is able to reason it out. And there is a statue of Ravenclaw there in the common room. And Harry is looking at it. We see the diadem on her head. There's the phrase, wit beyond measure is man's greatest treasure.
And then a voice pipes up.
Unfortunately, Electo Caro is there. And before Harry can even raise his wand, she's pressed her finger to the skull and snake branded on her forearm, and that's how we leave the chapter.
Dun dun dun. Right. I remember when I was reading this for the first time, and even when I reread it again years later after it had been some time, I remember being surprised by this because it's very different than kind of how it plays out in the movie, and you're just not expecting them to be waiting in the Ravenclaw common room. And you don't know why. You're like, well, I guess that makes sense, right? I guess I probably would have done something like that too if I was the evil head of a school I've just taken over. And we'll learn more about the thought process behind why they're there later. But I remember being like, oh, I didn't see that coming when I read it. So I also this time had a, oh, that's not good moment. But at the same time, we also know he's kind of already on his way there. So I don't really know what difference that's going to make. But
I think one of the things that is really interesting that we didn't touch on just yet in the chapter, but I think is really important is, you know, they're using the Room of Requirement as their hiding place. And we find that Neville has really learned the secret of the Room of Requirement of how to make it work and how to keep other people out of it that you don't want in it. You know, the only thing it can't do is make food, because that's one of the magical law properties, is you can't just make food out of nothing.
Which is a moment we did not give enough credit to Ron for, because he says that as like a very big learning moment. Cause I don't remember when at what point Hermione said that, but that's definitely something that he's just regurgitating from what he's learned from Hermione, and everyone's like, oh, Ron. Yep. And it's just another moment where you're like, oh, that's just so cute.
Well, and, you know, what makes it really interesting is that, and I think the movie does a real disservice to the Room of Requirement here, because, you know, when they come in, Harry is thinking to himself how it really looks like. It looks like a big treehouse, basically, you know, full of all these, you know, hammocks and everything, and or like a big ship's galley, you know, full of hammocks and everything. And like that doesn't come across whatsoever in the way that they do. I mean, it just does not look cool like that, you know. I don't really like the movie Hook, but I kind of almost picture that.
Yeah,
you know?
like the where the Lost Boys live and Hook, and there's just like hammocks and stuff everywhere. And I like that I like that the Room of Requirement keeps adding it, right? Like the whole point is that whenever they have a need for it, the room just it's magically there, right? They mention the girls' restroom or washroom shows up as soon as the girls start coming, because you know, it knows they can't maybe relieve themselves in the same way that a boy can. And it just kind of starts to grow. So I think of it as if the Lost Boys stuff just sort of organically started adding hammocks and color everywhere. Yeah, I think that's a really great way to think about it. I like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a lot of fun. But I mean, we literally leave the chapter on a cliffhanger. And so we'll have to wait till next week when we get to the sacking of Severus Snape. But Drea, as everybody's waiting, if they want to catch up with you, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on all the different social media platforms under Matt Rushing 02. You can find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we are talking about Star Wars each and every week. It's so much fun. You can also find me on the TFM network doing a few shows. One is called the 602 Club, where we're talking about all of the fandoms we love, not just one. Of course, you can also find there in that feed now. We are just about to release Snyder Cut as John Mills and I are walking through all of the directorial work of Zack Snyder as we wait for his Justice League, which is coming out in March, which is exciting. And then, of course, you can also find me doing Literary Treks and The Orb. Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and The Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.